Importance of Fear is a horror fiction podcast which is intended for mature audiences. Discretion is advised. Welcome, Fearlings, to another weird and horrifying tale made just for you. I am your host, Mashulu, and I'll be your guide into the macabre and mysterious. Tonight we learn what kicks off the zombie apocalypse in Death Cloud. Before we get started, take a moment to like, subscribe, and ring that notification bell so you don't miss a single terrifying story. Zach Borman, 22, Santa Monica Beach, California, 6 o'clock a.m. It had been an amazing morning for waves. The sky was painted with light oranges, pinks, and purples, signaling the sun's imminent arrival. Zach sat on his board looking back at the beach. There were other surfers bobbing up and down in the waves not far from him. None of them spoke. This was church, and service was in session for them all. Zach's gray-blue wetsuit covered his torso, biceps, and thighs. The water was extremely cold, but Zach was used to that. He'd been surfing at Santa Monica since he was 8. His mother would take him on Saturdays to teach him how to ride waves. She would paddle out with him, show him how to catch a wave, and how to stand up on the board. At midday, they would grab lunch and head back to the valley. This went on for 3 years until his father left. The divorce was messy. Zach chose to stay with his mom while his sister, Tina, stayed with his dad. With the family split in two, his mom wasn't able to take him to the beach as often. Over time, they only went once a year. Zach regarded those early years as his best years. He would often lose himself in thought, dreaming of what had been lost. Surfing with mom was what he was thinking about that morning. There weren't many people at the beach. The sun was coming up. Soon, the July heat would draw people looking to cool off. Early morning was the only time to surf and not have to worry about swimmers. Out of nowhere, the horrific sound of colliding metal shrieked through the air. It startled Zach from his memories. A shockwave almost knocked him off his board. Just past the beach was a row of three-story homes, and just past those was Pacific Coast Highway, or PCH. There, Zach watched an enormous green mushroom cloud climb into the air and ominously spread out in all directions. From his vantage point, Zach could make out a wrecked tanker truck. All the other surfers started to paddle in as fast as they could. Zach sat there stunned. The eerie, inhuman green fog rose from the base of the mushroom cloud and started quickly blanketing the surrounding area. What could make that color, he thought. Zach, come on, we got a jet, Allison yelled from the shore while waving her hands like a Muppet. He finally snapped back to reality and started paddling in. Allison was a surfer girl who Zach couldn't stand. She was hot, sure, but she was also a know-it-all who loved correcting him. He also hated that she was always right. He skimmed along the water's surface until it deposited him onto the sand. Allison had a frantic look on her sun-kissed face. Dude, what are you doing? That explosion looks chemical. We need to evacuate, Allison said, hands flailing in all directions. Sorry, it just weirded me out for a moment, Zach replied. Allison started to run, but Zach just stood there, so she turned and grabbed his hand. Move, dude, she commanded, pulling on his hand like he was a child. Zach started to run slowly behind her. She noticed he was carrying his board. Drop the board! I don't want to get caught in that green fog. But my mom got it for me when I graduated high school. Drop it, Zach! Fine. He dropped the board and started to run. The thick green fog moved out over PCH, then the houses, and finally it hit the beach. Allison could see people being enveloped as they tried to outrun it. Those who ran straight to their cars and sped off were the lucky ones, or just smart. She could have been one of them if she hadn't stopped for Zach. Idiot, she thought. Then it came to her. Quick, get back in the water before the fog gets to us. We can swim out to the pier. Zach stopped once again, the green fog not far behind him. You told me to drop my board and now, bam. The impact was hard. Zach was tackled to the ground. He could hear Allison scream, no, in the background. He felt a huge hunk of flesh being torn from his throat. Blood sprayed everywhere. Zach pushed back, but his assailant was too heavy. Life drained rapidly as each heartbeat sent more blood shooting out his neck. The world became muted. His back was torn open. His attacker tore his ribs out and feasted upon his organs. Mom, he whispered with his last breath. Sofia Gonzalez, 73, Abuela's Donuts, Inglewood, California, 5:30 a.m. Okay, everything is ready, she muttered to herself. It was still dark out with just a hint of the sun ready to paint the sky with daylight. Sofia was the neighborhood's grandma. She knew everyone and everyone knew her. Her donut shop was open from 5:30 to 10 a.m. every day but Sundays. After closing, she would go to the nearby soup kitchen and help prepare and serve lunch. All her kids lived nearby and had been begging her to retire and move in with one of them, but she felt like that was the fastest way to die. Keep yourself moving was her motto. Sophia was 5'1", had short white hair and big brown eyes. Her skin was wrinkled, which she was proud of. She was fit and still able to walk well, another thing she was proud of. There was a picture of her three children on the wall as kids. Now they had kids of their own. Every Saturday night, she would go to Manuel's, her oldest, for the family dinner. She would always make a huge production about wanting to cook, but really, she loved that her daughters-in-law took over. Donuts for her customers and tamales for Christmas was all she cared to cook these days. On her way to unlock the door, she paused, as she always did, and looked at the picture of Diego, her husband, and smiled. The sound of the door unlocking was like a dinner bell. The line straightened up as Sophia called out to them. "Come in, come in. Sorry for the delay. Abuela's Donuts is open," she announced. Rick entered first with a big smile and looked like a happy dog about to get a puppuccino. He was a long-haul trucker who came by every time he was in town, about twice a month. These were the best donuts on the West Coast, in his opinion. He was 38, perpetually sunburned, and on the shorter side. He wore a faded, frayed Dodgers cap and an old Iron Maiden t-shirt, jeans, and a pair of well-worn boots. His hair was a party in the back, but all business in the front. He loved freedom, beer, and complaining about foreign cars while still driving one. "Sophia, you look wonderful. When will you let me whisk you away from here?" he said as he made his way around the counter to give her a big hug. She kissed him on the cheek and laughed. Rick returned to the front of the cash register. "You're too young for me, mijo. I need a man with more snow on the roof," she replied with a smile. Half her customers called her abuela, the other half flirted. She loved it all. She had seen that he was waiting in line and had already grabbed three glazed donuts and a large coffee with four creams and two sugars. He once asked for four sugars as well, but she said no. His order had enough sugar. He never asked again. "I would dye my hair for you, sweetie. You tell that no good husband to look out. Oh, he knows I have options. That's why he treats me so well." The line was out the door, and at any other place you'd hear grumbling, but not here. The donuts were great, but it was the banter that paid the bills. "I'm going to be gone for at least 3 months with this shipment, so here's some extra money for you and that man that shall not be named." He grinned as he placed a large wad of cash in her hand. Rick made good money and truly loved Sophia and Diego, so he always paid for donuts he didn't eat. "This is too much," Sophia protested. Part of the dance was trying to refuse the money, but she was always grateful for it. Rick put his hands up. "I insist. If I can't steal you away, let me buy you something nice." "You're too sweet, mijo. Now you hear me. I know you drive too fast and I don't like it. Be careful. I'll see you soon." She took the money as he grabbed his order. "Me, speed? Never. Bye, Sophia. Bye, Rick." Rick left Abuela's, crossed the street, and climbed into his truck. His watch beeped. "Damn," he thought, "I'm really late." It had been a gamble to go to Sophia's, but he couldn't resist those donuts. He pulled a bear claw out and took a bite. "Dear God, I think that woman puts crack in these," he thought to himself as he took a gulp of coffee. Being late another few minutes didn't matter at that point, he wagered. So why not enjoy the moment? His watch beeped again. All right, I'm going," Rick grumbled as the truck roared to life. "Time to put the pedal to the metal." He loved driving cliches. Rick said he would be out of the city by 6:30, before the sun was up and traffic hit. The company wanted him to be in Vancouver in 20 hours. It usually took 21 and only if the traffic gods were with him. He pulled up his traffic app to find that the 5 was already a mess, so he'd have to take PCH. It was going to be a long day. Sophia kept serving customers as Rick sped off in his huge truck. "That boy is always driving too fast," she thought. It seemed to her he needed a wife, but that was her cure for all men's issues. 10 minutes passed, and suddenly a huge tremor rocked the donut shop. All the windows shattered. Everyone hit the ground, their ears rang. Sophia tumbled over, breaking her hand, trying to stop her fall. Amari, the customer closest to her, quickly came to her aid. The sound of car alarms could be heard everywhere. "Are you okay, Sophia?" "I'm fine, mija," she insisted. Amari helped Sophia off the floor. Sophia surveyed the damage. The customers outside had picked themselves off the ground and were looking up at the sky. Some had been injured by the glass. She made her way out of the store, dazed. "What's going on?" She slowly looked up to see a large green mushroom cloud in the distance. The crowd muttered with fear to one another about what it could be. It started to collapse in on itself, forming a rolling wall of green fog. "What the hell is that?" Amari whispered. I have no clue, but I need to check on my husband, she replied. In a loud voice that almost seemed to have magical powers, she announced, Everyone, return to your homes and quickly check on your families. Stay out of that fog. Vámonos. She turned back into her shop to grab her keys. Amari grabbed her shoulder. What about you? It's not safe here. That's some kind of nuclear blast. I'm just going to get Diego from upstairs. I'm sure the blast woke him. I promise we'll leave. Now, get to your family. Get them to safety. I'll be fine. Do you need help? We can get him and go together, Amari asked, eyeing the wall of fog on the horizon. Thank you, mija. I can handle things here. We'll leave soon, I promise. Here, take these. She shoved several donuts into a pink box. Give these to your little ones. Now go. Okay, thank you. Make sure you leave soon. Amari took the box and hurried home. Sophia watched for a moment as the sky turned emerald. The green cloud would be on top of the shop in 20 minutes, maybe sooner, she guessed. Her right hand throbbed with pain and was very swollen. She tried to move it, but couldn't. She went behind the counter and called her oldest, Manuel, from her old landline. The sound was crackling. Son, it's Mom. Get your brothers and the rest of the family and get out of L.A. now. I'm coming to get you and Dad. No. If you come to get me, you'll be coming closer to the explosion. I'm fine. Some customers are helping us out, including Dr. Mitz. Luckily, he was here this morning. Can't stay away from my bear claws. The police are evacuating the entire area. Get to San Diego, and I'll text you. Dad is fine. I'm fine. Go, now. I'll see you soon, she said, in a tone that made it clear no more argument would be tolerated. Yes, Mom. I love you. I love you too, sweetheart. See you soon, she hung up. He's a good man. He would make sure everyone got out. She hated lying to her son about the doctor, but if she hadn't, odds are he'd have done something stupid, and there was no time for that. Sophia climbed the stairs to the second floor where her apartment was. She looked out the broken windows to see that things were going bad quickly. People panic too easily, she thought. Sophia slowly opened the door to the bedroom. She peered in. Lying on the bed was her husband, connected to a ventilator and IV, fast asleep. The medication made it hard for him to stay awake. One of the reasons her kids wanted them to move in was to make it easier on her. But Sophia wasn't giving up her apartment or the care of her husband. He'd spend his final day at home where he belonged. She lay down next to him and stroked his thinning gray hair. Outside, pandemonium had erupted. The sounds reminded her of the LA riots in 92. They had lived in South Central when it started, and they watched the whole thing go down. She put her head on Diego's shoulder and closed her eyes. Baby, I love you. More than anything, I love you. It's been an amazing 50 years, but I think this is the end of the road. She couldn't have moved him like this, and she wasn't going to leave him behind. Leaving without Diego was never an option. It wasn't long till the green fog engulfed the little donut shop. Greta Goldwyn, 35, speeding along PCH near Santa Monica Beach, California, 6:05 a.m. Jerry, I'm on the freeway right now. I should be there in about 30 minutes. She swerved around people, flashed her lights, and threw the middle finger with one hand on the steering wheel. Why are so many people on the road? She barked. Get out of my way, Greta yelled. Don't they know I only have 12 hours to get this event ready? I hate this city. No, you hate people, but you also hate not being around the action, which means living around people, Jerry said calmly on the other end of the phone where he stirred his cream and sugar into his freshly made coffee. Shut up. I should have just slept at the studio last night, Greta lamented, barely missing a Prius trying to get out of her way. That's what I did. I sent all the fabric changes you wanted out at 5 o'clock this morning. The seamstresses are working now, but... What? Greta's butt clenched. Promise you won't get mad. You shouldn't drive mad, he cautioned. I'm already driving mad, you twit. Jerry, I will hang you from your sack and have rocks thrown at you if you don't tell me what the problem is right now. She was not kidding in that moment, and Jerry knew it. Target says they want the red fabric on the dress, not the blue. What? Where did they get off telling me what color fabric to use? She proceeded to swear for a solid minute at Jerry. Finally, right before she was going to put two words together that never should be, he spoke up. They're the client paying for your work and the event. My guess is that this came from Josh, the son of the owner. He wants to be a fashion designer and has no taste, Jerry said. Greta sped around another group of cars, putting all her rage into the gas pedal. She didn't see Rick's truck pulling out ahead of her. You can call the floor and tell them to switch it back. A Nepo baby twat. Velma Wallace, 52, Secret Lab, 6 miles below Hawthorne, California, 3 o'clock a.m. Velma watched the tanker being filled with XV-3-7 on her screen. She had short blonde hair, blue eyes, and felt she weighed more than she would like for her height, but never did anything about it. Her mind ran down everything that could go wrong. Much was riding on this delivery. The whole world, in fact. It had taken years of planning, huge jumps in technology, and a very unpleasant partnership with mole people under New Jersey. But finally, everything was coming together. She was on the cusp of world domination. "It's going to be okay. Rick is a great driver. He'll get this out of the city safely," Saul said. Saul had light olive skin, short wavy black hair, and a tall skeletal frame. There was no part of him that didn't make one uncomfortable to look at. "He'd better, or guess who I'm going to skin alive, Saul? No mistakes will be tolerated. When will he arrive?" "He'll be at the depot with his truck at 5 a.m. They'll hook up the tanker, and he'll be out of L.A. before sunrise, traffic gods willing." Saul took a long drag off his chocolate-flavored vape. In a past life, he smoked cloves. "He has worked for us before," Velma asked, still staring at the truck being filled with her life's work. "Yes, he's reliable and doesn't ask questions." He slouched his bony frame down and played with the vape, twirling it in his fingers. "He needs to understand the cargo is volatile. If air hits XV-3-7, or there is a major impact like a car crash, the explosion will be massive and there's no putting the genie back in the bottle. He must drive as carefully as he can." Velma turned to look at Saul to punctuate the importance of the sentence. He irritated her just by breathing, but he was an excellent scientist, so she tolerated his presence. "You know what's riding on this. Act like it and sit up," she said coldly. "I do." Saul sat up on command and put the vape back in his pocket. He knew Velma could have him liquefied if she wanted. She turned back to the surveillance monitor. "I take it he will be stopped just after Sacramento and mysteriously disappear?" "Yes, all traces of him and the tanker will be wiped from the system. Everything has been arranged," Saul reassured Velma. "Good. The company can't afford loose ends. When will the cargo reach Shanghai?" "1 week from tomorrow, and boom, new world order," Saul said with a glint in his eye. "That's right. The virus will spread like wildfire throughout China, but the Chinese government will try to hide what's going on. By the time they realize they need help, it will be too late. Billions of undead will spill into the neighboring countries like locusts. Governments in their path will beg for help, but the Americas and Europe are controlled by us, so none will materialize. Meanwhile, Russia, too focused on the wars we started along their borders, will be overwhelmed. While they're drowning in an ocean of living corpses, we'll evacuate everyone we've deemed worthy to Canada. The Middle East and Africa will have no way to stop the undead flooding in from India. In 6 months, the contagion will die out, and with it, the undead threat. With the undead gone, we'll have control over the world's resources. The new world order will be set. The population will be reduced to just over 2 billion people. The cherry on top? Wiping out so many will save us from global warming. Really, if you think about it, we're saving the planet from overpopulation. We'll rewrite history to be correct and forge a new future. She had given that speech to the bathroom mirror several times. "If we weren't in a secret underground lair, I would say your speech was a bit unhinged," Saul said in a dry tone. She turned once again to her screen. "Very funny. I should liquefy you." Allison Hahn, 18, Santa Monica, California, 6:30 a.m. Allison had started to run towards the water when Zach began to complain about leaving his board behind. She turned just in time to see Zach get tackled by another surfer. She screamed when the man bit Zach's throat and ripped out a huge hunk of flesh. Then the guy tore into his back like Zach was full of candy. She threw up. Tears filled her eyes. She had always wanted to date Zach. Sure, he was as smart as three-day-old bread, but he was hot. She heard guttural hisses all around her as the dead began to reanimate and look for fresh flesh. The fog bank was advancing quickly. She had to act. Allison sprinted into the water, dove in, and swam hard. She was a California girl who had grown up in the sun and sea. She cut through the water like a fish. Every muscle was strong, every curve aerodynamic. She hoped that the water would act as a buffer between her and the gas cloud. When she finally had to come up for air, she was several yards away from the shore. The fog had settled at the water's edge. Her theory had been right, thankfully. Those who tried to follow her were quickly pulled under the waves. Their lungs filled with water and they sunk like rocks. She could see Zach standing on the beach. His throat was just one gaping wound. He looked sad and lost. The fog spread toward the north and south along the coastline. Inglewood and South Central were in its path. She knew she couldn't go back to the shore. "Girl, over here," a voice called. Allison looked around and spotted a small fishing boat coming towards her. It was being piloted by a man with a baseball cap on. The boat stopped a few feet away, and the man motioned for Allison to climb aboard. "Did you get bit?" he asked before pulling her aboard. "No, my friend did, though. A man tackled him, and, Allison replied as she thought about Zach's death. The man grabbed her hand and pulled her out of the water. "It's okay, kid. You're safe now. My name is Samuel. Here, wrap yourself in this," he said while handing her a towel. Samuel was in his 60s and had spent years in the waters of California. His skin had tanned into a rich toasted brown. He had a cigarette dangling from his lips and nicotine-stained fingers. "Thank you. What the hell is going on?" "Not sure. I think you and I had the same thought. Get out on the water and get away from that fog. I've seen people on the shore attacking others, viciously biting and clawing. It's terrible." "Is this what happened to your friend?" Allison looked back over the water to the chaos on shore. Police and news helicopters were flying over the area. They were close enough to hear gunshots and screaming. The fog itself now stretched as far as the eye could see along the beach. She thought about her mom and dad. Where are they in this mess? Are they dead? "Yeah, it's zombies, right? That chemical from the truck is turning them all into zombies," Allison asked, turning away from the horror. Samuel looked at her for a moment. "That's what I reckon. Why anyone would create a chemical like that, I have no clue. I say we go to Catalina Island. It's about 42 miles from here. We should be able to get help there," Samuel said. Allison nodded her head in agreement. "Seems like a good place to watch the end of the world," she replied. If Rick had only left on time, the company's evil plot may have worked. But a good donut is a good donut. What do you think? How would you mastermind a zombie apocalypse? Be sure to tell us in the comments below. If you liked this Portents of Fear tale, consider joining our Patreon. There's a link in the description below. Want more horrific stories? Click on one of our other episodes on your screen now. Good night, Fearlings. Sleep well, if you can.